Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining the Mphasis Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. I'm Nirav, your moderator for the day. We have with us today Mr. Nitin Rakesh, CEO of Mphasis, Mr. Arvind Viswanathan, CFO, and Mr. Vinay Kalingara, Head of Investor Relations. As a reminder, the webcast link or the call invite is in the mail that the Mphasis management team will be referring to today. The same presentation is also available on the website of the Mphasis, that is www.mphasis.com. In the investor section under the financial and filing, as well as both on BSE and NSE websites, request you to have the presentation handy. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Before we begin, I would like to state that some of the statements made in today's discussion may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. A detailed statement in regards to this is available in the Q1 results release that was sent out to all of you earlier. I now hand over the floor to Mr. Nitin to begin the proceedings of this call. Thank you, and over to you, Nitin.
Thank you, Nirav. Good morning, everyone. Good to have you all on the call again. The tech industry is evolving rapidly, driven by innovation. Global uncertainty, macroeconomic complexities, and geopolitical tensions shape a cautious business environment. Technology remains a top priority for enterprises navigating this environment while balancing growth with operational resilience. The rise of GenAI is driving a global shift toward AI-first digital native business models enabled by the democratization of intelligence. Both legacy enterprises and digital native companies are accelerating investment in future-ready technology. Over the past quarter, the demand environment has demonstrated some resilience, but only selective strength, despite sustained macroeconomic uncertainties. Decision-making continues to be more deliberate as enterprises navigate the current environment. With the overhanging threat of sophisticated cybercrime and need to comply with legislation, it's an urgent priority for organizations to defend and protect. Clients are reprioritizing their spending, focusing on must-have capabilities and creating efficiencies and cost savings to programs that demonstrate a clear ROI, while at the same time minimizing project execution risk. Business teams are wanting to move forward with at-scale AI programs, embedding AI into products, into decision-making, and customer experience within tight budgets, since there is now an imperative to fund these AI programs from within the existing overall budgets. The demand for enhanced value at a reduced cost continues. At the same time, they seek continuous release of new features, fast time to market, and the ability to quickly launch innovative products and services to stay ahead in the competitive environments. Technology teams are looking for means to modernize their legacy monolithic systems with disjointed data architectures while servicing the high technology debt that has built up over decades. At the same time, tech teams are also under constant pressure to deliver enhanced value at a reduced cost while moving forward with their transformation agendas. GCC is an evolving team with multiple models at play, including carve-outs, build-outs, and managed captives. Traditional people-based service models are under pressure to reinvent and survive. AI is recalibrating how IT services operates. By broadly published estimates, it's believed that 25% to 30% of all working hours could be impacted by large language models. It is fast becoming an imperative for businesses to move beyond experimentation and establish the structures and processes needed to turn AI into tangible impact reality. At Mphasis, we understand that differentiation and investments are needed to pursue large AI-led opportunities. We continue to drive deal-making that needs planned investment as rapid changes in AI tech are leading to services being delivered as software. We continue to invest in areas where we see long-term demand. Even in the face of economic uncertainty, we remain committed to disciplined execution at a micro level, ensuring that every client engagement is solutioned holistically to capture efficiencies, accelerate speed to market, and reduce risks. New developments in AI, particularly in GenAI, are radically recalibrating the costs and benefits of this modernizing legacy and reducing tech debt as part of the larger set of changes in how IT operates. This is resulting in opportunities where multiple initiatives are brought under a unified transformation program, leading to larger outcome-driven deals with a self-funded approach to transformation. This is an integral part of our savings-led transformation thesis and platform-led construct that we discussed over the last few quarters. As we drive our growth initiatives forward at emphasis, we are expanding and deepening our AI-led offerings. Instead of applying broad strategies across entire industries or regions, we focus on specific needs of individual clients, particular deals, and meaningful conversations. This clarity at the micro level, combined with our commitment to innovation and IP-led platforms, positions us to navigate today's challenges effectively and support our clients in successfully doing the same. As AI-led deals take center stage, we are doubling down on our proprietary next-gen platforms. Emphasis Neo Zeta, Emphasis Neo Crux, Emphasis Neo Saba, to name a few, from the Neo Zeta platforms. These solutions combine generative and agentic AI to boost human performance, modernize critical systems, and accelerate next-gen application development for business transformation. Through AI, we are shaping forward-looking deals and reinforcing the value of our platform-led strategy, which is clearly evident in our AI-led deal pipeline and TCV wins. We are early adopters and implementers of AI-based solutions for clients, which has positioned us well to help with their AI journey, create efficiencies, cost savings, and minimize project risks, while at the same time accelerating our business. This is reflected in our highest ever quarterly TCV of $760 million, of which 68% is AI-led. Since the launch of Emphasis.ai, we have over 250 plus of our AI-ML models available on Amazon, Microsoft, and Google marketplaces. As I said in the previous slide, clients are interested in seeing solutions and the value Emphasis.ai brings to our end-to-end expertise helps organizations to strategize, build, and institutionalize these solutions. The timeline of milestones and our development of AI assets listed at the bottom of the slide are all a testament to Emphasis' long history of AI innovation and our unique positioning to deliver innovation to clients at scale. To give you a sense of how we are making this real, as an example, we took on a core card platform modernization for a large financial firm. Our AI interventions boosted overall efficiency by greater than 40%. We took a big monolithic platform using COBOL, Assembler, VSAM, and a growing mixed environment in a high-tech debt situation and modernized it into a composable, business capability-driven architecture that is cloud-ready. We took a single code-based platform built over 40-plus years ago with 50 million lines of code using complex Sysplex architecture and modernized into a new core design based on buying with the ISO 20022 compatibility. We transformed 1.4 billion accounts on file, 900 plus APIs, 25 billion authorizations processed annually, extremely low latency of less than 40 milliseconds, and re-engineered it into an event architecture with real-time event-driven streaming to replace targeted batch processing. In a sense, we transformed bespoke implementations requiring specialized domain and interim talent into faster building of composable capabilities and value streams using modern engineering platforms. On the back of this program approach and AI-led delivery, this has been one of our fastest growing relationships at the company and has already crossed 50 million annual revenue threshold. Since the launch of Emphasis.ai, our pipeline has grown 2.2x. We currently have the largest ever deal pipeline driven by these platforms, as well as the largest ever TCV wins in this quarter, led by large deals. As I previously mentioned, AI is table stake for us. Whether it is for new deals that are AI-led or AI-infused, existing clients, or even for our own employee productivity. We solution what we call the Emphasis AI Superhighway, which accelerates enterprise AI enablement and adoption of AI at scale, securely delivering models from experimentation to production with organization ground rates. This enables 50 to 60% faster time to market, up to 90% accuracy rates, and 50% increase in productivity at times. Emphasis AI Superhighway comprises of prefabricated AI strategies, methodologies, and innovation lab operating models, and includes orchestration of cloud, data, and security platforms, plus our own proprietary accelerators. It delivers an agentic workforce, integrated LLMs, predictive decisions, and knowledge graphs, model testing for ethics, trust, explainability, security, end-to-end value stream observability, and synthetic data creation. It's not a surprise that AI is supercharging the pipeline, which in Q1 of FY26 was 68% led with AI deals. BFS pipeline was up 47% year-over-year, and non-BFS pipeline is up 108% year-over-year. Large deals pipeline is up 40% sequentially, and 154% year-over-year. Traction in AI archetypes includes AI Ops, AI modernization, as you can see on the chart here. We also continue to see a higher share of record deal wins as we largely stay focused on deal making. As I said earlier, TCV wins for the quarter were at $760 million, our highest ever new TCV wins in a quarter. We won 4 large deals in Q1, for a cumulative 14 large deal wins in the last 12 months. Of the 4 large deals, 3 of them were over $100 million, and 1 is over $50 million deal. TCV wins have been led by BFS, insurance, and TMG. Our TCV to revenue conversion pace has remained steady. Customer propensity to spend budgets on cost takeout, efficiency, and vendor consolidation is increasing. And we continue to make investments in the right areas where we expect customer demand. To give you a sense of the kind of deals we won, I specifically call out one large win. A large North American life insurance company chose Emphasis as their sole provider to consolidate application development and application management vendors to achieve alignment to a new operating model, manage outcome-based delivery, improve performance and service quality, and predictable cost while driving significant savings. Emphasis will be deploying its new suite of AI platforms as part of this transaction. We have in the recent past called out the fact that AI is a great leveler, especially in areas where we did not historically see a right to win, such as large run engagements. This deal is a testimony to that thesis starting to play out, and we expect it to repeat across multiple other deals as well. Moving to revenue performance by segment, we continue to push for revenue growth, which is anchored in our strong client mining model and tech-led offerings. Q1 26 revenue was $437 million, reflecting a growth of 1% sequential and 6.5% year-over-year in constant currency terms. We had an impact of a decrease in revenue from a non-strategic ATM business, which is reflected in the other secondary market segment. Our direct business contribution continues to inch higher and accounted for 97% of our overall revenue for the quarter. We expect the pace of revenue and deal conversion to remain strong, propelled by our savings-led transformation team. Direct revenue for the quarter increased 1.6% sequentially and 8.1% year-over-year in Q1 in constant currency terms. Growth momentum in direct continues to be strong. Anchor geography, the U.S., grew 3.2% sequentially and 10.3% year-over-year in direct. EMEA region declined by 15% sequentially in constant currency terms. The impact seen in EMEA is due to a ramp down of a global customer in this region. In our rest of the world segment, we grew 6.8% sequentially and 30% year-over-year in constant currency terms in the direct business. This metric also includes our increasing presence in the GCC play, since many of these deals are structured in the India geography. Our overall reported revenue for Q4 and Q1 for rest of the world includes the impact of decrease in our non-strategic ATM business. Revenue contribution from our core service line enterprise apps has increased by 2 percentage points in this quarter. We grew applications by 3.6% sequentially in constant currency terms in direct. BPO and IT service lines for direct declined by 2.7 and 5.3% sequentially. Moving on to the vertical performance, our BFS, insurance, and TMT verticals continue the growth momentum. Specifically in direct, all three verticals delivered a 20+% YY growth in constant currency terms. At an overall company level, BFS has grown 6.7% sequentially and 18% YOY in Q1. While direct BFS grew 8.1% sequentially, BFS growth was also driven largely by wallet share gains in existing accounts, ramp up of new deals won in recent quarters, including early in Q1, and continued strong execution in new account wins. As called out in our previous earnings calls, our insurance vertical turned into a growth engine and is expected to continue the momentum in FY26. Insurance vertical grew 20+% sequentially and 27.5% YOY in constant currency terms. Direct TMT vertical grew by 2.4% sequentially and 20.6% year-over-year, driven by continued deal wins and conversion from recent large deal wins for revenue. The logistics and transportation vertical was impacted by some customer-specific investments. We believe the impact from these is largely behind us, and we expect this vertical to gradually recover through the remainder of the year. We have significant new deals in the pipeline across a broad set of clients in this vertical and across a broad set of sub-verticals to support this growth. Overall, at a company portfolio level, our performance has demonstrated resilience and is in line with our expectations. Our client pyramid continues to improve across the board. Year over year, we've added one client in the 100+ million category, two clients in the 75 million+ category, two clients in the 50 million+ category, and one client in the 20 million+ categories respectively. We successfully ramped up a couple of new accounts we signed recently into 50 million+ accounts, as I stated earlier as well. The additions to multiple customer bands The middle of the client pyramid has expanded, gaining from deal wins and our team focus on next category of growth accounts. On an LTM basis, top 10 accounts grew 7.6% YOY, and the next 20 accounts grew 7.4% YOY. Moving on to our quarterly financial metrics, we delivered to our philosophy of maintaining margins in a stated band while making investment for growth. Our EBIT margin remained stable at 15.3%. Reported operating profit for the quarter grew 0.7% sequentially and 11.2% YOY. Our EPS of 23.2 represents an 8.5% YOY growth. Sequentially, there was an impact from higher ETR due to certain minimum tax expenses in certain subsidiaries, which we believe will normalize through the remainder of FY26. Operating cash flow generation was at $24 million for the quarter. Cash flow for the quarter was impacted by marginal delay in collection from one of our top customers due to changes in their internal system, which has since been resolved, and due to the annual incentive payouts, which are typical in Q1. Adjusting for these, normalized cash flow is around $46 million for the quarter. As noted, the delay in collections has impacted our DSO, which increased by 9 days to 84. In summary, we are seeing growth momentum through resiliency and deal wins, which was led by the BFS, insurance, and TMT verticals. We are also seeing ramp-up from our recent large deal wins playing into this outcome. We are focused on investing in AI-driven growth initiatives, and as I mentioned, my pipeline is at the record levels, 16% growth sequentially and 84% growth YY in pipeline. We are very pleased with the highest ever TCV wins of $760 million USD in Q1, which included $300 million plus and $150 million plus deal. And as I mentioned, we also continue to deliver stable margins. Coming to the outlook, we remain steadfast in our commitment to client centricity and technology-led transformation, an approach that has consistently delivered results for us. We will continue to focus on the virtuous cycle grounded in micro-level execution, pursuing, winning, and executing at the account level, while continuing to build the propositions using our tech tribes and emphasis.ai investments. This model has been instrumental in driving momentum, evidenced by robust deal wins and consistent execution across quarters, even as the macro environment remains uncertain. As we focus on investing in AI-driven growth initiatives, we continue to strengthen and expand our AI-led offerings and propositions. We will continue our efforts on conversion of pipeline to TCV and TCV revenue. For FY26, we expect to be at 2x the industry growth on the back of our Q1 performance and steady conversion of TCV to revenue, as well as a steady ramp-up of large deals in ongoing quarters. Our target EBIT operating band would stay within 14.95 to 15.95 as stated earlier. With this, I'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from Lana Sudhir from Kotak Mahindra. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, and Nitin, congrats on great deal wins and outlook. First question, it looks almost like 80% of your revenue seems to have grown at 20% plus on an average, probably the highest growth rate in the industry on an organic basis. Now that you are calling out that in logistics and transportation also will be growth recovery going ahead, do you think with the current very good intake, the order intake in this quarter, do you think we'll have a real shot at converging with the growth rates of some of our similar sized peers where their growth rate have been significantly higher in the last couple of years compared to us?
I think the way I would address that is that the direction of travel is absolutely in the right direction. I think we've recovered the business. We've had some headwinds to deal with in the last couple of years. Most of them, at least as we stand today, seem to be behind us. So there's no reason to believe that this trajectory will not continue. The only reason why, you know, we are at this point, you know, guiding to what we are guiding to is that the environment hasn't really changed. There is still a bunch of uncertainties. There are still things that, you know, require a significant push. But at a micro level, I think we're very pleased with where we are. And as I mentioned in, I think, the last quarter call, leading indicator of pipeline turned into a great, you know, quarter close for TCV. And if that execution continues, then I think we will potentially be in a better place this time next quarter. But we want to take that time to make sure that we have the same rigor and the same outcome to drive that confidence as we go forward through the remainder of the year. Still too early in the year for us to have a definitive view on what the next 3 quarters will bring. But the direction of travel is absolutely what you just mentioned.
Sure. And so while you are guiding for a growth recovery in logistics, are there any, let's say, weak spots in BFS or insurance or PMT at this stage where we are concerned that some of these macro uncertainties will push these weak spots into a slippage kind of a situation?
As we stand today, the answer is no, we don't see any of those weak spots. And I think our approach to dealing with any headwinds has been just sell our way out of that by actually creating deals, using the propositions and differentiation, and using that momentum to work around these issues. But as we stand, nothing is imminent here.
Sure, Nitin. And $760 million kind of net new TCV in this quarter, almost 2x that of your run rate in the last 2 quarters. So is there any signs of a fatigue in terms of deal booking or given that especially these 2-3 verticals, BFS, insurance, and tech have been doing well in the last few quarters, any fatigue of client spending here that you're picking up, or things are still going on strongly in these areas?
Sunil, I think, again, lead indicator is pipeline. We've broken out the pipeline by BFS, non-BFS. We've broken out the pipeline by top 10, non-top 10. And I don't think we use the word fatigue in deal making in our lexicon, because that's just not the way we can sustain the growth. Remember when we bottomed our business in December 23, we called for BFS and TMT to lead growth. Then a couple of quarters ago, we called for insurance turnaround visible. And as you can see, insurance has grown 20%+ sequentially this quarter because we converted deals. I think pipeline is fairly active across multiple segments, including logistics, including healthcare. So all we have to do is just diligently work. Each of these verticals operates at a different rhythm. But I would not say that we're at a point where, despite, you know, converting $760 million in the quarter, our sequential growth in pipeline is 16%, which means our propensity of originating conversations, turning them into qualified deals, and running them through the qualification, the solutioning process continues to be fairly high. So that virtual cycle of, you know, originate, solution, sell, and execute is something that we're very focused on.
Sure, sir. One last bookkeeping question to Arvind. So this, what is this other assets increase? It increased very sharply during the quarter. Any color on this?
Sure. So there are 2-3 factors coming in, right? One is that, you know, under IFRS 15, where you have a fixed price project where you have complete and deliverable on a percentage of completion until the undeliverable is accepted, it comes as contract cost. And as you know, you've seen a sharp increase in our fixed price revenue. So that is one of the big contributors for this. This will get translated to unbilled, you know, as soon as the deliverable happens. Most of these are completed projects and we expect that to move to unbilled in Q2. The second element is some of the large deals requires savings to be kind of given upfront, which ends up being a contract acquisition cost. You've seen the kind of TCVs that we've declared in this quarter, so that has kind of come in. But there is not the similar level of cash outflow. So if you really look at it, you would see the other liabilities also go up because it's more a balance sheet item in that sense, both from an asset standpoint as well as the liability standpoint.
Yeah, thanks, Vijay. Thanks, Arvind. All the very best.
Thanks, Vijay.
Thank you very much. A request to all the participants, kindly restrict to one question per participant and one follow-up question. The next question is from the line of Nitin Padmanabhan from Investec India. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Congrats on a solid quarter. It looks like a very tightly executed quarter, because and quite impressive at that. Because if you look at EMEA has sort of declined, we have had the top customer decline, we have had the ATM business has declined, and still we sort of delivered this solid growth. Just if you could just contextualize the growth that we saw in both BFS and insurance. So all of these are just closures of the earlier wins, or they were something that incrementally came through through the quarter, which surprised positively. And just as a follow-up is, from a deal win perspectives overall, I know you have said this in different bits and bits over the quarters. What's driving this change for us structurally, wherein our deal wins are extremely solid, our pipeline still continues to grow? So from an organizational perspective, if you could just quickly summarize the changes that you made that sort of really driving this in a quick short summary would be very helpful.
Then both great questions. On the first one, I think, as I mentioned in my script, it was expected that we should be able to mitigate any headwinds because we saw the momentum of deal closures, even in Q4, early in Q1, and some of that definitely played into, you know, the conversion of revenue. Now, every deal is not the same. Some deals convert quicker than the others. If there's an element of large-scale transition, you will see that deal will have some element of 1 to 2 quarters of conversion. If there is an element of taking over an existing asset, i.e. a set of applications that move to you as a provider, or you consolidate a bunch of, you know, providers out, then the revenue impact is much quicker. So I think that's played into the revenue impact that you've seen in all the three verticals that grew more than 20% YOY. The only correction I want to make to your comment is that the large client decline and EMEA decline are actually linked. That's really what's driving the EMEA, because we classify geos by origin of contract. So it could be a global customer, but if there is a bunch of work that we do for them out of Europe, it will go under EMEA. It's an anomaly, but you know, just from a consistency standpoint, that's just the way we continue to report. The reason we were fairly comfortable in giving you a certain outlook 3 months ago and all through the quarter was based on the fact that we had a visibility into the pipeline and the deal conversions, and we did execute it very tightly, as you rightly said, through the quarter. The second question that you asked me around what's changed and what is driving the growth, I think the reason I geeked out a little bit on this call when I explained to you what we did with a large financial services customer was to give you a peek of what kind of technical expertise is driving these kind of opportunities. I think gone are the days where clients had a need, you would meet that need through potentially a series of engagements that were in one shape or form, a combination of capacity, right shoring. And even if it was a fixed price or a managed services contract, it was really P times Q plus margin pricing. Today, I think we are bundling a fairly sophisticated technology solution into every proposition. This doesn't happen overnight. It's taken us 7 or 8 years using our tribes and squads construct starting 2018-19, infusing our next lab starting 2017-18, and then 2023 we announced emphasis.ai. I think they're all coming together, combined with the extreme account-based focus that we've been talking about for many years now, where we have a three-in-a-box model at every account. We have a high-touch model, a high-tech model, and we make sure that we have to deliver to what we commit to the customer as well. So that's a high trust, you know, aspect of that as well. So bunch of things that we've done over the years, bringing them all together, making it real for the customer, solving a problem that sometimes the customer didn't see, or many times we co-created or co-ideated into creating the right set of problems to solve for. So the shift left that we've talked about with front to back is actually playing into our strength today. And the proactive deal-making is what's really driving a change and a differentiation. There is a certain degree of fatigue with customers where they have incumbent providers, large providers, the quote-unquote tier one providers, who have really, in a way, started to become a lot more stale because they haven't kept up with the level of investment and the level of high touch and intimacy required for transformation programs. So I think it's a, I gave you a long answer, but it's a bunch of things that have come together. But at heart, it's the tech depth and the ability to bundle that tech capability into a proposition that the client is valuing.
Perfect. That's helpful. I have a lot of questions, but if I can just slip in one more. From a margin perspective, I think this quarter has been pretty solid. We have had utilization move up like 400 basis points. And then we also have these large deals coming through. So is it fair to assume that one should, at least from a modeling perspective, assume the lower end of the band, or you think you still have room to sort of deliver on margins as well?
See, you know, we've given a range, Nitin, right? And we've largely operated in the midpoint of the range. Right? I think there are always puts and takes, right? We had utilization go up, but we've made some investments with clients, which kind of set each other off, right? Growth is good, but it also, you know, if you hear what Nitin talked about, you know, there are a lot of investments that we are also doing on areas which are important for growth. Right. We built a large deal team, done a lot of investments in our platforms. So I think, you know, it will be range bound, right? Is what we think at this point of time.
Sure, fair enough. Thank you so much. And all the
I, mean, I think the philosophy doesn't
change.
Right? Yeah, the philosophy doesn't change, Nitin. The prioritization for growth by holding margins, that's the kind of the North Star that we're still following. That philosophy doesn't change.
Got it. Very helpful. Thank you, Nitin, and all the very best. Yeah.
Thank you.
Next question is from line of Rishi Jhunjhunwala from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Two questions here, Nitin. Firstly, you know, on the deal pipeline, right? So we have won $760 million this quarter, and still we are talking about pipeline swelling up on a QOQ basis. You know, I know we've formed a large deal team and there's been a lot of focus around that, but given where the macro is and what the other peers are suggesting in terms of deal pipeline as well as conversion, what do you think is specifically driving this, you know, significant growth for us?
So, Rishi, again, I think Nitin asked a very similar question. Answer is not very different, except that at this point in time, at least for the last 4 to 6 quarters, we've been trying to focus on individual account-based activity, highly contextualized solutions, while making sure that at a broad level, we continue to invest in areas where we think there's going to be broad adaptability. Right? Themes like application transformation using cloud-native tech, legacy modernization, mainframe exit, you know, infusing AI into the way you run operations, both IT and business operations, right? Predictive, preventive, self-healing. So I think investing in broad themes that we think will cut across segments and customers, but then customizing those very highly into the account using our account CTO model. I think that level of intimacy and customized solution to the customer is very attractive. Combine that with the fatigue that they have with some of the legacy providers, that actually makes it a very happy, fertile hunting ground for us. And the role that the large deals team has played really is in institutionalizing the process of ideation, deal origination, deal qualification, deal solutioning, pricing, price benchmarking, and then, of course, the deal dynamics of how you actually run the deal through a process, including reactive deals. So we've seen an uptick in our win rate on the reactive side as well, where we participate in RFPs, because not every segment or every industry or every geography is conducive to proactive only. You may originate a deal, but then go to RFP. So I think it's the culmination of all the work that we've done over the quarters and over the years. And we finally kind of managed to get that virtual cycle going, and we want to just keep feeding it as much as we can. And by the way, what you're seeing in the pipeline growth is the qualified pipeline, right? We obviously have a top of the funnel pipeline that you know, we start the deal discussions with. So I think that's the best way for me to explain it to you. I know it's a little bit of a qualitative answer, but you know, our business is services, our product is trust, and we are expanding that product by actually infusing platforms and repeatability and execution capability into it.
Got it. And Second question, if you look at last 3-4 years, right? I mean, we've had issues around DXC, DR, SVB, and then this overhang around the logistics client. Is it safe to say that as things stand today, we do not have any major risk around any parts of the businesses, and from here on, growth would be normal and completely based on, how we are executing on our overall business?
Yeah, I think that's fair to assume. I think I answered to Sudheer also earlier. As we stand today, we don't see any of that. Again, that's a point in time today. And part of the reason why, despite this kind of events, we are still, focusing on executing in Q2, Q3, and Q4, is because of the environment. So it's not like there's any tailwind in the environment at all. It's really, we have to go and create those opportunities and run them through. And as more and more clients adopt these kind of solutions, we just have to make sure that we keep refreshing our existing, contracts and engagements with them as well.
Got it. So I guess from next quarter onwards, we don't have to look at the business X of any other concern.
We never looked at it that way, but I guess
we did, sir. Yeah, we did. All right, thank you. All the best.
I know. I said we don't. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Nana Sola from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question, and congrats on the strong deal win number. My first question is on the revenue conversion of these deal wins, the ramp-up schedule that you expect on the deals that you've won. So should we expect the best ever deal win reflecting in a strong bunched up quarter in the coming quarters, or would you say that the benefit of these deals would be spread out through this year in FY26?
Again, I think I didn't catch your name, so excuse me for that, but the way to think about it is that it depends on the type of deal. There is a nuance to certain deals can ramp quick, certain deals require a period before they can ramp, and I think this is a fairly balanced, set of deals that we won. If you look at the 4 large deals, not all of them will have the same trajectory of ramp up. While some of them already actually contributed to Q1 as well. So it's fair to assume that on an average, 1 to 2 quarters is a decent assumption to take for conversion from this TCV to revenue.
Understood. And then my second question is with respect to some of the operating metrics. So your headcount seems to be largely flat on a sequential basis. And the utilization levels have sort of inched up quite a bit, and which is sort of a level which we've not operated in the last many quarters. So in the context of the deal wins, which are very strong, how should one think about the divergence between the two?
So we've been kind of talking about the increasing divergence between headcount and revenue. Right? If you look at, there are a couple of shifts that have happened. One is that we've seen a significant shift towards the right, compared to what used to be only T&M.
So sorry, Tim, your audio is not coming clearly.
Hold a second.
Is it better now?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So, Sulam, if you look at it, like I said, this is not something that is new in terms of a divergence between revenue growth and headcount. If you've seen our business, we've seen a significant shift towards fixed price, which kind of lends itself towards more productivity and ability to drive revenues with lesser headcount. Supply chain parameters are a little different than how we have historically looked at, right? It is not a single, it's a little more nuanced. It's not a single strategy of just hiring freshers and, playing the entire pyramid in that sense, right? So you may have to invest in very differentiated skill sets, but that may not be at scale. And so to that extent, it's a pretty dynamic approach that we take to supply chain. So I don't think our growth will be limited from a headcount. It's no longer a lead indicator. We will do what it takes on the supply chain to deliver what our customers need at the most efficient cost price.
And I think also keeping in mind the environment from a supply standpoint, I think it's fairly conducive for us to run this rolling 90-day plan on supply chain with a certain element of internal rotation combined with just-in-time onboarding. I don't think we need to run a large bench as we used to do historically, because the model itself is shifting from just in people-based services to platform or technology new services. So that gives us a little bit more operating leverage.
Understood. Very clear. Thanks for taking my question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from line of Manik Taneja from Access Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. I actually had a question, just a clarification question on the logistics segment. While you talked about expectations of recovery from here on, there was some large transaction that you were chasing outside of a large customer or the top customer there. If you could talk about progress on that front. And the second question is, how should we be thinking, while you did allude to the change in our hiring or the delivery models, but given some of the newer opportunities that we are essentially trying to target through a combination of AI and the legacy modernization piece, should we probably be thinking about our utilization rates being sustainably better compared to what we've seen in the past? Those would be the two questions.
I think on the first one, I don't recall that we talked about any specific deal. Normally, we don't talk about deals before they actually close. So maybe there is a little bit of confusion as to whether it was us or somebody else. But reality is that pipeline continues to be pretty robust, and we have visibility into deals that exist in verticals, including logistics and travel. Part of the reason why we believe that we will see a gradual recovery through the remainder of the year is because we think we should be able to move the needle with some of these deals that are in the pipeline, and they have been for the last few months. On the second question, I think it's fair to assume that utilization will probably be elevated compared to the last 3-year average. But as I mentioned earlier, it is not a control metric for us. It is actually an outcome of the actions we take on how we onboard and how we manage the supply chain. We typically don't manage to A, utilization. We manage to the visibility of demand on a rolling 90-day basis. And between internal rotation, reskilling, upskilling, and external hiring, we try to meet the 90-day rolling basis through our supply chain teams. So again, utilization is a metric that has been important for the last 25 years, but I think it's not going to be as important. Not that we will not have people or we will not add people, but it's just that it's not going to be a linear correlation between utilization and revenue growth.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from Abhishek Gupta from Access Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Congratulations for the strong quarter. Just wanted to get clarification on the deal wins. Like, what was the component from the new clients or from the existing clients, or while like the GCC's part in the deal? Like, what are the natures of this deal wins? Just some clarification over there.
Actually, we have called out the 4 deals in our press release as well, and they are they're quite widely spread between existing customers in the top 10 category, customers that we acquired over the last 2 years, and potentially the pipeline also is fairly widespread across BFS and non-BFS, as well as top 10 and non-top 10. So I think it's not one vertical, one customer, or any specific item. I think it's been an attempt for us to broad-base that over the last many quarters, and that's kind of what's playing in, right? But again, given that BFS, TMT, and insurance have led it, you can assume that, you know, that's kind of been the growth drivers from a deal win perspective as well. And we'll hopefully, as I said, expand that to other segments soon.
Got it. And sir, lastly, like, you might have answered this question, but, like, what we saw a huge uptick in the insurance vertical in this quarter. So what led to that growth? If you can just clarify again. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Our business is very simple, yeah. You sell more, you bill more, you bill more, you grow more. So we sold more deals, and we managed to convert them to revenue over the last 3 months. And I think we have a lot more in the pipeline that we continue to focus on closing in that segment as well. Both combination of existing client giving us a large deal, as well as new logos that are being signed, which again give us the confidence that we will see some more growth in the coming quarters. And of course, the quantum of growth on a sequential basis may not look as much because now we're already at the new baseline for Q1.
Oh, got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from line of Sandeep Shah from Equirus Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a great execution, especially on deal wins consistently. The first question is on the logistics sector. I think within your initial remarks indicated we have made some investment in few top clients within this segment. So that could have resulted into a gross margin decline in this sector versus gross margin improvement in the others. So just wanted to understand with this investment, do you believe the worst in this segment and our top client is behind, not just in the near to medium term, but beyond 1 to 2 years in a terms of longer term outlook?
I think, again, I broadly answered it. Fortunately or unfortunately, long-term is very difficult to call given just the dynamic nature of the environment and every customer going through their own journey of change and transformation. But I think it's fair to assume that bulk of the impact is behind us. And I think your assumption around gross margin and investment is fairly, concise and reflective of what the status is. So again, you know, we'll take it quarter by quarter. We'll continue to operate in every account with a view that we should be able to grow, create those opportunities that I talked about in terms of adding value and showing the value to the customers. And that approach doesn't change for this vertical and all clients in this segment.
Okay. And just a question in terms of your outlook growing 2x the industry. So if I look at the large peers, they may be growing at 3 to 4%. And for us, the kind of deal wins to go to 7-8%, we just require 1.8 to 2.2% compounded Q on Q. So that number looks conservative looking at the deal wins. Or you believe the deal wins will have a greater impact next year rather than this year because it may take some time to transition. And Arvind, just wanted to understand in the margin, despite a gross margin decline being massive in the logistics, margin has been stable. So is there any one-off which we should be aware? And there are some investments which we highlighted on 3rd July. As per the notes to the accounts, can you brief the nature of these investments?
So let me take the first one, which is your question around CQGR growth. Again, I think we're just trying to make sure that the fact that we had to thread a needle this quarter and have pretty tight execution, we just want to make sure that we continue to find ways to keep that execution up, especially in an environment where things change on a daily basis. So as this visibility improves over the next quarter or 2 quarters, you will get a pretty good idea of how this ramp up is happening. But it's also fair to assume that not every deal will convert very quickly just because some of those will require setup time, transition time, ramp up time. So we're just baking all of that in an environment where most of our peers are seeing pressure either on top line or on bottom line or on both. As well as, you know, the decision times, we just want to make sure that we don't go out on a limb, and try to to be brave. We just want to make sure that we continue to execute. And as execution-led visibility improves, you will see that. On the margin and other questions, on Arvind.
So, you know, Sandeep, we've seen a drop in gross margin at the logistics level, but we've also seen, you know, improvements in every other, you know, vertical in many ways, right? So one of the things that has happened is while there has been some kind of investment in the vertical, we've been able to, on the back of growth, kind of use our internal standards to fulfill a lot of the project-based growth, right? So effectively, you've been able to offset that impact through better utilization and rest of the BUs. And given that some of those, you know, has come in as a whole, you know, you've seen higher revenue at, you know, marginally higher cost, right? Which means margins are effectively flat. There is no one time in nature. There is no reversal of sort, which is other than the usual anomalies that happen, but not meaningful at a collective level.
Okay. And just the investment on 3rd July, those are small, but just wanted to understand the nature.
So, you know, so that is a investment of a capital nature, Sandeep. It's not, it is not a P&L kind of investment. What we've done.
Let me take that one. So, Sandeep, I think we made a strategic investment in a venture called Ayoka, which is essentially a GCC advisory firm being set up by the ex-founder of the NEO Group. He still is a shareholder in the NEO Group, but they've decided to set up a separate venture to advise enterprises in the global GCC space. We made a minority investment. We put in $4 million for a 24% stake with the view that 26% stake, sorry, that with the view that we will essentially have an opportunity to shift left in helping shape deals as clients start thinking about, you know, GCCs and the various shapes and forms that it takes. That is not a business that we think will fit well if it was within emphasis. So we decided to take a strategic investment approach and use that opportunity to create new client engagements, not just in the GCC advisory, but then in the follow-through execution of those deals as well. So that, I think we made a detailed press release on that earlier today. You should be able to find more details in the press release.
And there was a second investment in Locate Software. So is it M&A, small M&A or?
So that is one of the other consolidation deals, Sandeep, that we've done as a customer. It's a very small deal, right?
It's not an acquisition.
It's not an acquisition. It's basically a, you know, a vendor consolidation initiative where we have taken over the people and the contract has been given by the customer to us. Right. So of course, the accounting treatment and the disclosure follows an M&A accounting, but this is typically, we don't take over an entity. We are not even rebadging. We are hiring people and the contract comes with the customer. And there is a contingent consideration for the person who used to run that business. And therefore, it takes the nature of M&A accounting. There will be no goodwill. It all flows through the P&L and a deal economics factors this cost which gets amortized and, you know, meets the margin threshold. So it's something that we've done in the past and it's one more of that.
Okay. Thanks. Congratulations again and all the best.
Thank you.
A request to all the participants. Kindly restrict to one question per participant and join the queue again for a follow-up. The next question is from line of Kawaljeet Saluja from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, congrats on a fantastic deal for India. My question is for Arvind. Arvind, you know, is the 12 billion rupee increase in the current quarter in other assets entirely deferred contract costs?
So, like I told Kaval, there is a split between what I would call will go into an unbilled revenue, right? Because it is unbilled revenue of the fixed price projects, which goes into contract cost right now. And the rest of it would be a combination of some of the investments we made on building IP as well as contract acquisition.
And again, what will be our receivables if we include the contract costs as well for the quarter?
The only point I will make with respect to that cover is there is also a liability against it because these are accounted but not paid.
So let's basically take on a net basis, gross and net,
so,
what the numbers would be.
Then actually there is, it doesn't change, to be honest, because you will see the same kind of increase on the liability side with respect to contract acquisition cost.
And the third thing is, Arvind, there is a massive increase in contract, you know, other assets in the non-current part, which means that, you know, there are certain fixed price contracts in which, you know, maybe it will remain unbilled or remain in contract assets for more than 12 months. So what's the nature of engagement which is causing such a big shift on a, in a one-quarter basis, yeah?
So typically the fixed price unbilled that I talked about, that comes in the current assets. Typically a contract acquisition cost comes in non-current assets. So these are deal savings which get spread over the term of the deal, and therefore that gets into non-current. The fixed price kind of example is more the contract cost and not the contract acquisition cost. So the nomenclature is a little similar, both come in other assets, but what is in non-current is more what is the amount back to which will get recovered over the deal value as a contract acquisition cost. The other one will be more on the current side.
Right. And the other financial liabilities is just the other part of the, what I would say, revenue in which there are unearned and et cetera lying in, presumably. Is that correct?
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much, yeah. And congrats once again on great deals.
Okay. Thanks,
thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take that as the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nitin Rakesh for closing comments.
Thank you again for another interactive call and your interest in Mphasis. We really appreciate the early login, and we do believe that we had a good start of the year and that sets the stage for the year ahead. Our achievements are a direct result of the dedication and talent of our incredible employees and leadership team and the continued trust of our clients and shareholders. I'm deeply grateful for their unwavering commitment to excellence. Thank you again, and we look forward to talking to you next quarter.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Mphasis Limited, we conclude this conference. If you have any further questions, please reach out to the Mphasis Investor Relations at investor.relations@mphasis.com. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.